DZUP 1602 Kasali ka.
Saya at sigla sa DZUP 1602. Simula ng umaga sa boses ng estudyante. Mga programang likha ng mga estudyante para sa mga estudyante. Pagsapit ng alas 11, tara! Tugtugan na sa talatugtugan kung saan ihahatid sa inyo ang magandang musika at masayang kwentuhan. Tuwing alas 12 ng tanghali, nakahanda na ang mga programa sa At Your Service para kayo ipaglingkuran at sumagot sa inyo mga katanungan. Sa alauna ng hapon naman, makinig, makiisa at makialam sa samut-saring ide at adhikain ng mga programang may magagandang layunin sa Advocacy. Balitaan, balitaktakan at kwentuhan sa alas 3 ng hapon sa May Punto Ka Dyan. Pumasok na sa back-to-back na eskwelahan sa radyo kung saan bida ang iba't ibang kolehiyo ng pambansang pamantasan, ang Radio School. Tatlong oras na, alas 4 hanggang alas 7 ng gabi. At tawagin na ang buong tropa pagsapit ng alas 7 dahil tropang radyo na kung saan nabubuo sa radyo ang tropahan. Sobrang saya at sigla mula Lunes hanggang Biyernes. Kaya tara na sa matinong usapan para sa maunlad na bayan dahil sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka!
DZUP Balita. Mga balita ang tinutukan ng DZUP 1602 sa oras na ito.
Magandang tanghali, narito na ang balita sa oras na ito. Iminumungkahi ng kalihim ng Department of Transportation and Communications na si Joseph Abaya na palawakin ng buffer zone sa Tubataha Reef sa Sulusi. Sinabi ni Abaya na ang posibleng masakop ang lugar mula Negros hanggang Palawan bilang pagpapalawak sa buffer zone para mapigil umano ang paglapit ng mga barko sa mga coral reef. Ayon kay Abaya, ang posibilidad ng pagpapalawak ng buffer zone ang maaaring maging solusyon upang hindi maulit ang insidenteng pagsadsad ng USS Guardian sa Tubataha. Hanggang sa ngayon ay hindi pa umano na itatala ng ahensya ang aktwal na kabuuang pinsalang natamo ng Tubataha Reef at maitatala lamang nila ito kapag natapos na ang salvage operations ng sumadsad na barko. Ito po si Chris Lanzaderas para sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka, susunod na ang Salam Radio, hatid ng UP Institute of Islamic Studies.
DZUP Balita. Mga balitang tinutukan ng DZUP 1602 sa oras na ito.
Assalamualaikum. Ito ang Salam Radio, naghahatid sa inyo ng mga balita at talakayan tungkol sa Islam, kulturang Muslim at iba pa.
Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Magandang hapon po sa inyong lahat. Ito po ang Salam Radio, ang nag-iisang Muslim segment sa DZUP 1602 Kasali ka. Ngayong hapon, pag-uusapan po natin yung nakaraang segment na napag-usapan ni na Professor Wadi, yung Islamic calligraphy. Nakasama natin yung ating guest na si Professor Riza mula sa isang university sa Malaysia. So Professor Riza, we would start the one about Jawi. Actually sa Jawi po kami huminto nung last.
Last time we stopped at Jawi. Like I explained before, Jawi is obviously it's writing the local languages and dialects of Southeast Asia with the traditional local Arabic alphabet. So that alphabet is called Jawi. And the only difference with Arabic is in the sounds that the Arabic alphabet doesn't contain, or the Arabic like the Arabic speaking people cannot pronounce, which is the Ajami letters or Ajami sounds, excluding je, plus the local sounds like nga and ye.
Including the P.
Yes. Yeah, so the Jawi alphabet has 5 more letters.
Add-on summa. Yes. Just like that.
So that's
33.
That's basically the only difference. Otherwise, in terms of calligraphy, any Jawi text or document simply follows either of the established calligraphic styles. If it does, of course. Mm. I mean, we can like ordinary people can write in Jawi script.
It means in the native people evolve sort of changes in the letters.
Yes, of course. Because they need to include like the sounds that exist in their own dialects. So obviously they have to invent letters for that.
Para sa kalaman mo ng lahat, si Professor Riza ay nakakaintindi po ng Tagalog.
Pero
hindi masyadong fluent. Kaya pag napansin nyo, parang nagtatagalog ako minsan. Inaalaman din ng Taglish.
Yeah, but I may need you to ask your questions in English para naintindihan ko. Sigurado.
Okay, good. San yun? Besides that, ano pa yung parang nakikita nating pagkakaiba ng Jawi at saka Arabic letter na sa tingin natin ay essential siya?
No, that's basically it. That's the only difference. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to. My interest is because obviously, you know, if you give me the chance to propagate my cause, obviously I would grab that.
Okay.
I mean, it's a good thing that we're discussing this issue now. I've been discussing it with Prof. Wadi for a year now. It's been a year now. And before that, I wouldn't call myself a champion, but I have been propagating the cause in Malaysia since 2008.
You mean the promotion of Islamic calligraphy here?
Not Islamic calligraphy, but Jawi calligraphy.
Jawi calligraphy, yes. In particular.
See, when you say Islamic, then that's going to exclude the non-Muslims.
I see.
Why should it? If you say Islamic, then that's going to be like, yeah, exclusivist.
So
but what we're trying to say, we want to revive. See, that's my idea. Let's revive.
Revive
the traditional heritage.
Yeah, the cultural part.
Exactly. Why have we got stuck in this cycle of self denial complete abandonment of our heritage?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this was the heritage. This was the heritage of the Tausugs, of the Maguindano, of the Maranao, of the Malay.
Yeah.
Of Orang Jawa, Orang Nusantara in general.
Orang Nusantara is from Indonesia?
Orang Nusantara means the people of Southeast Asia, the Malayo-Polynesian people of Southeast Asia.
Is a sort of generic
Yes, it's an encompassing term. I think it was proposed, I'm not sure, but I think it was proposed either during Sukarno or by Sukarno to address the Malayo-Polynesian natives of Southeast Asia. So, I mean, these people, they had that script. Of course, before that came the Kavi script, which was the Hindu-inspired script.
Hindu.
That was like the Alibata.
Alibata is more on the Hindu part.
Yes, yes. Sorry. That was, of course, the Alibata that you have in I think that's what it's called, right? In the evidence that you have discovered in Luzon that originates from Java again.
The Alibata originates from Java?
Yes, and then the Javanese, the old Hindu Javanese script that obviously originates from India.
In fact, the name is actually controversial. Alibata.
Yeah, that's exactly, that's what I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, before I was, I was, I was of the belief that wait a minute, I mean this is Alif Bata.
Yeah, Alif Bata in Arabic.
It's so it's so Arabic. So why does it look different?
Yeah, sort of the native tongue changes the pronunciation Alif Bata from Alif Bata.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So I think it's better to call it the Kavi script.
Yeah.
Because it's more accurate. Mm. So anyway, I mean this is the traditional script that you guys had, and so my proposal in Malaysia was, I mean, I was working in this Islamic Institute it was an Islamic Quranic Institute.
You mean you're currently working with them?
No, not anymore. I worked there for a year, and then I came back to the Philippines because I had a better offer, a better job. So anyway, I mean, that 1 year that I was working there, this institute, Yayasan Restu,
mm-hmm.
Or Restu Foundation, they were into Quranic production.
Mm-hmm.
So they also had classes. They had a college. In that college, they would teach Arabic calligraphy, as well as in Arabic, you call it Zuhruf. In Malay, you call it Sani Unkir, which is... you also have that in the
Tausug version.
In the Moro languages, you call it ukir. In Tagalog, you call it ukid, which is floral decorations.
The motif, the floral.
Yeah, exactly. The illuminations around the
carvings in the woods.
Exactly, certainly. Exactly. So those were the arts that they would teach. They also had like interior design, architecture, and stuff. And then there they were teaching Arabic. With an Arabic curriculum.
Uh-huh.
And I argued, why are you... I mean, these are Malay students. It's not... I mean, it's good that they're learning Arabic, uh-huh. but because it's not their language, why do you give them assignments that they cannot relate to? Why don't you teach them Jawi? Why don't you teach them their own language with the Arabic script, which is their own heritage? And they can relate to it. They can read it. So I promoted that curriculum, and then that inspired me.
They buy it.
They bought it, yeah. I like a few years later when I went back to visit them, I noticed that, wow, they already have a an established curriculum of Jawi. And that's very good. That's very good. Yeah. I think it's a very good cultural revival.
It's a good start. Yeah.
So that inspired me to promote this idea also in the Philippines. And so I approached Prof. Wadi.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good if UP as the national champion of intellect would promote this cultural revival.
Good. Babalik po tayo para sa mga ilang paalala.
Kasali ka!
Oo nga, kasali ka!
Alam mo pa yung issue
tungkol sa pagkakas? Oo, narinig ko na yan.
Kasali ka! I don't believe that.
Kasali ka!
So what? Eh,
pero kung tutuusin, mali yung
nagsasali. Kasali ka!
Hindi dapat gano'n ang pagkakas sa kanila.
You gotta be kidding me.
Hindi ah, magaling
ka. I swear to John Mars! Ikaw! Kasali ang opinion mo.
Matinong usapan para sa maunlad na bayan. Dito sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka!
Facebook,
email,
software,
programming,
HTML,
MMORPG,
e-commerce,
cache server,
Visual Basic, C++,
heto na ang talakayang magbibigay linaw at kabuluhan sa mga isyong may kinalaman sa teknolohiya. Italakayan, huwag pahuhuli sa mga pagbabagong nagaganap sa larangan ng information technology. Italakayan, tutok na tuwing Miyerkules alauna hanggang alas dos ng hapon. Italakayan, kung saan ang IT ay hindi pang eksperto lamang, kundi kaalamang inilalapit sa bayan. Handog sa inyo ng UP Information Technology Training Center at DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Tara na, yun na yung jeep! Dige na! Ma, bayad ho.
Saan to?
Diyan lang po sa tabi. Para.
Ugaliing maglakad kung malapit naman ang pupuntahan. Naka-exercise ka na, nakatipid ka pa!
Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Kung bata pa tayo, tinuruan na tayong mag-ipon. Sana hindi mawala ang kaugaliang yun. matutong muling mag-ipon. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Assalamualaikum! Ito ang Salam Radio, naghahatid sa inyo ng mga balita at talakayan tungkol sa Islam, kulturang Muslim at iba pa.
Assalamualaikum! Nagbabalik po tayo sa ating palatuntunan. Brother Riza, nung napag-usapan natin lately na yung ano yung connection, parang connection, the connection of history, particularly the Philippine history from the Mindanao areas. The old text is actually in Jawi. So I think this Jawi, you know, learning Jawi is very important in the sense that you would understand or you could read texts that are oldest texts in the history. Yes. So with Jawi. So ano sa tingin niyo yung parang connection, parang ano nito?
Well, we would elaborate more on the significance, right, yeah, in part. I've noticed some documents from the Sulu Sultanate, Sultanate of Maguindano, that are written in Jawi. And you know what? I gotta be honest with you. I'm gonna tell you my own feeling. It's sad that I can read those texts, but the children of Sulu and Mindanao cannot. Isn't that sad?
That's frustrating, actually.
So my point is, I can read them, but I don't understand. So much better if you can read and understand it. If you're the children of that of that heritage. So that is actually one of the main reasons why I'm promoting this idea. For you guys as the children of Sulu and Mindanao, as the children of the Philippines, to be able to relate to your ancestral heritage, to your history.
The primary sources of those texts.
Exactly, the primary sources. Why? So that you don't have to rely on people translating these things.
Yeah. Sometimes there are biases along the way. So you have to stick on the primary sources, which are the Jawi, actually.
Yeah.
That's one part.
That's one of the main reasons why I'm proposing this idea. Of course, another one is a general revival, not just reading the old ones, but to be able to write new ones. Make it part of the curriculum in Sulu and Mindanao.
Yeah, that's interesting. So we are starting here at UP. I hope so. It would.
Hopefully, yes. We'll see. That depends on you guys. Yeah.
So I heard that Professor Wadi was also engaged before on Jawi texts from the, from the Mindanao area. They got it in the archive, actually. So are you aware of that?
Yes, we had discussions before. He told me about his collection of Jawi manuscripts. That seems interesting. Actually, Prof. Wadi seems to be one of the few people remaining today who can read and write in Jawi. By few, I don't mean few. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are many, but these are unfortunately marginalized. Usually, people in the villages.
I mean,
the educated, which is very unfortunate. You're educated in the Latin curriculum, but you're illiterate in the... I'm sorry to say this, but illiterate in your own curriculum.
Yeah, it's a sort of open eye-opener for us.
We take it
that way. Okay. In fact, basically, my late mother writes in Jawi.
Okay, that's very good.
When she sent a letter to my Lola, grandmother in the province, we stay in Zamboanga then. Lola is in Sulu. So they have a correspondent in Jawi, actually. I read one of those letters. I was, nagtaka ako. Sabi ko, parang Arabic to. Diba sabi ng nanay ko, sabi niya.
Pero naintindihan mo.
That time, kasi maliit pa ako, hindi pa ako masyadong makaintindi ng Jawi na yun. In fact, Arabic letter, hindi pa ako gano'ng masyadong familiar. Sabi, nagtaka ako. Sabi ko, parang, I thought, parang galing sa ano, parang kinuha lang nila galing sa from the Quran. Kasi basically, pag Quran nang talagang matatakot kang hawakan or value it kasi it's from the Quran. They call it in karma, yung makabusong, yung tausog.
Yeah.
It's a Quranic letter, then you have to preserve it.
Revere it.
You don't just put it anywhere. It's not like the other letters. So that's how we value it. Yeah. So my mother said, it's a Jawi, it's a tausog. When you read it, it's in Tausug, But when you write, it's in Arabic. But there are some sort of changes or add-ons of letters in it.
Of course.
I see. So that's the first time to encounter the Chowi, actually.
Well, it's a good thing to know that you can actually read that.
Yeah. So I hope in this coming few days we would, you know, understand more of the Chowi.
Hopefully.
So with our next encounter with Arabic letter and the Chowi, we would go on further on the Chowi. The workshop that we have.
Of course. Yeah,
inshallah. So that's one part that interests me, that historical part of the connection of Chowi letters with the heritage of the Sulu, particularly part of the Mindanao.
I've been told, and I have observed this, that in Sulu there seem to be more Chowi literate people compared to Maguindanao and Lanao.
What do you think the one of the factor that
I think one of the reasons is that's something worth research, but if you want to ask just like that, the people of Sulu are more in contact with the people of Malaysia and Brunei.
That's one factor, I think.
And in Malaysia and Brunei, Chowi is one of the, I think in Brunei is the official script.
Script.
In Malaysia, it's one of the two official scripts, Latin and Chowi. So because the people of Sulu are in constant contact with Malaysia, they have more exposure to that. So, the people of Maguindanao and Lanao are more isolated in that sense.
Because they're in the mainland.
Yeah, and they've been more in contact with Luzon
rather than in the Luzon.
Yeah,
I see.
That's probably the
main
reason.
That would be one factor. Again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, Chowi letters, are you thinking of sort of like the reinforcing letters in the Chowi? Have you come to that idea of
what do you mean by reinforcing?
We know that Chowi and Arabic, the difference between Chowi and the Arabic letters, there are changes of letters, like that's, they become,
yes,
F become
yeah.
Pa. Yeah. So is there a need to add something like
there's
letters?
There's absolutely no need. I got to be honest with you. Of course, it's not like I was born with the knowledge of Chowi, I had to learn it, right?
Yeah.
When I first got exposed to Chowi, I didn't understand the letter that represents nye.
Enye in Tagalog.
In Tagalog, you say enye.
Yeah.
That letter actually, because in Farsi, that represents peh. Yeah, so I would read everything wrong. And then I was thinking, you know, that thing got to be changed. Obviously, that's usually the problem, see, with newcomers. They are fresh, they're ignorant, and they think they're there to change the world. So, I mean, it's not just people who come from the Middle East, people who came from the States, people who came from Europe. They were like the Spanish. When they first arrived here, they completely disregarded the local culture, and they just, you know, I mean, they're like, they were thinking, okay, everything has to change.
Yeah.
So they burned books, they burned everything cultural, everything local, and everybody had to be forced to become Spanish. So unfortunately, it's always like that.
Yeah.
It starts like that. So when I first came, I'm like, okay, that thing is weird, and that has, but then gradually I learned to appreciate it, and then I realized that, okay, there are some changes. Like the pe in Chowi is actually the letter that represents fe with two extra dots.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in Persian, that's the letter that represents ba with,
ba,
with two extra dots.
So you mean Persian letters sort of, what, the historical part is that it came from Arabic, something like that? Not actually.
No, the Persian. Yeah.
It evolved from
Arabic.
We
also write in the Arabic alphabet.
So the letter,
right?
It evolved from Arabic, or
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why you have the Ajami letters, which are Ajami letters are the four sounds that don't exist in Arabic, so they're added to the Arabic alphabet and they become the Ajami alphabet. It's exactly like Chowi. Chowi got five sounds, and So no, I think it's perfect. It's perfect. I think your alphabet is perfect. And the only thing that probably needs to change for aesthetic reasons only is the letter that represents ge.
Ge.
Yeah, in Persian we call it gaf after kaf.
Gaf.
So it's kaf. It's a kaf with an extra slanted line on top.
You mean when you write it's a gh, something like that? Ge. G-H-E? Or
in Latin, yes.
In Latin. Yeah.
But in Arabic, it's a in Farsi, it's a gaf, it's a kaf, with an extra slanted line on top. In Jawi, it's a kaf with a dot on top,
extra dot on top.
Yeah, I think it's aesthetically, you know, it has room for improvement. Mm-hmm. So I think if you replace the dot with the slanted line, it becomes more aesthetically appealing. Mm-hmm. That's probably the only thing. I also propose that in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
So no, otherwise it's perfect. It's perfect, and all we want to do is to institutionalize this, and to teach it in correct proportions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, magbalik po tayo para sa ilang mga paalala.
DZUP 1602 kasali ka.
Boto 2013. Makisali, makialam, matinong usapan para sa maunlad na bayan. Boto 2013. Sa Marso, mga kandidatong senador at party list groups pupuntuhan ang mga issue ng bayan sa DZUP eleksyon. Talakayan! Sa mismong araw ng eleksyon at 13 ng Mayo, kasama ang DZUP sa pagbabantay sa maayos na halalan. Balita mula sa mga presinto at bilang ng mga boto, tututukan sa DZUP election coverage. Boto 2013. Makisali, makialam, matinong usapan para sa maunlad na bayan dito sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Best friend, ano ba namang buhay to? Bagsak ako sa exams kanina. Pinagalitan ako ni Mami. Wala pa akong payong kaya basang-basa ako nung umulan. Na-turn off pa sa akin yung crush ko. Tapos, nadukutan pa ako pa uwi ng bahay. Tsaka gumimik ang barkada at iniwan ako. Ay, buti ka pa. Lagi kang andyan. Salamat, best friend, ha? Good boy!
Ang mga hayop ay ating alagaan, pagkat sila yung mga kaibigang maaasahan. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Anak, samahan mo nga ako sa supermarket. Kailangan ko ng tagabuhat.
Sige po, ma. Kunin ko lang yung susi ng kotse.
Wag na, anak. Sayang pa sa gasolina. Kaya namang lakarin yung supermarket.
Eh ma, para hindi na po tayo mahirapan.
Okay lang anak, maglakad na lang tayo. Exercise ko rin to eh.
Kung kayang lakarin, lakarin na lang. Tipid ka na sa gasolina, na-exercise ka pa. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Assalamualaikum! Ito ang Salam Radio, naghahatid sa inyo ng mga balita't talakayan tungkol sa Islam, kulturang Muslim at iba pa.
Assalamualaikum. Ang oras po natin ay 1:30 minutos. Nandito po tayo ngayon, nagbabalik tayo sa pinag-uusapan natin kanina. Professor Riza, narinig natin itong mga nakaraan na parang yung Spain yata, parang certain school, university in Spain is interesting in, you know, in digging sort of Jawi documents here, okay, particularly in Mindanao. Ano sa tingin niyo yung parang ano nito, parang significance nito?
Yeah, we actually you mentioned this during the break. Yeah, like I said, you know, it always starts with you thinking you're the only one who's right, and you try to suppress and destroy every contrary evidence and everything otherwise, and then And then gradually knowledge builds up, and as you learn more, you realize that you know less.
Yeah.
And that maybe in the end, you realize that maybe everybody else was right and you are wrong. So, you know, I mean, it always comes down to that. Actually, it's true. It's true. Mm-hmm. Like all this revivalist movements, all these revisionist movements, everything is, of course, inspired by the West. But I mean, it's modernism, postmodernism. Yeah. It all started in the West. It's all about going back to what we had and being unbiased and being neutral and discovering the truth. And all these modern movements of discovering the truth, they're all coming out of the West. So yes, of course, actually today, not just Spain, most European institutions, most Western institutions, many Eastern institutions, they're involved in an honest and intellectual discourse. Today, their states, United States, I mean, Spain, the European Union, they contribute a lot to the revival and discovery of the old heritage in the Orient.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, and also if you're saying that they're digging up the existing evidence in Jawi. Well, it helps shed new lights on even their own history.
Yeah.
I mean, they want to know. I mean, I suppose a person wants to know about his own history from the perspective of the others.
Yeah.
You will never know the truth if you just, content to one perspective.
Yeah, you become close-minded.
Yeah. Like, I can give you an example of Iran and the Iranian history. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I can't generalize this to all of the Orient, but many Oriental cultures don't have a tradition of documentation. They don't have a tradition of history writing.
Mm-hmm.
Iran is one of them, and Iran is actually a good example of that. Unfortunately, we don't have that tradition. It's not as sophisticated as the Greco-Roman or the Chinese. So like there are parts of our history that we completely have to rely on external sources.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised that the Safavid Iran.
That was
like the empire that stood in the face of the Ottoman Empire. So that's like, this is 16th to 18th century Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. We have written nothing about its history of the greatest phase of our own history. Nothing.
Even the secondary sources, but secondary sources is present.
Secondary sources. What do you mean by secondary sources?
I mean those that are from the people outside.
Exactly the point. Everything that we know about those 200 years, 16th to 18th century, everything that we know about 16th to 18th century history of our own country, comes from European sources. I mean that's just absolutely is. So you see, we don't have that. We need to rely on, like our history of 13th to 14th century is likewise the same. We know nothing about it we know very little about it because that's when the Mongols invaded Iran. So that's sort of like a Holocaust. So when the Mongols invaded Iran, they adopted a policy of slash and burn, and they would. And so in the existing Islamic sources, Mongols are portrayed as these savage, barbaric infidels.
Yeah.
Now, the truth is coming out. Mongols were not infidels first and foremost. They were Christians.
I see.
You see, that's a surprising thing. We didn't know.
This is the other part of the fundamentalist.
The story is like this. They were ruling China at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Genghis Khan was ruling China. And they weren't savage. They were very, very cunning and savvy and very sophisticated for our IQ to understand. So they were ruling China with only 200,000 men.
They're trained like just like the gladiators, the Romans.
Yeah, exactly. And they only had 200,000 men to conquer the world.
Oh.
So they realized the only way that they can do that is to burn everything on their way. Otherwise, if they leave anybody alive...
No trace.
Yeah, if they leave anybody alive in this town and they move to the next, the moment they come back, the people of the first town are going to rebel against them. And 200,000 is not enough to conquer the world. So that's the policy they adopted. And the thing is that the army, the Mongol army that invaded Iran wasn't even Mongolian. They were Turks.
Turks.
They were Turks.
Really? Most of them were sort of like that mixture?
No, these were Turkish tribes that were affiliated with the Mongol Empire in China. Mm-hmm. So they were paying their tributes. And they were on the border between, so they were in Central Asia. They were between the Middle East and China.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Chinese, the Mongolian Empire, decided to hire these people instead of sending their own
the
soldiers.
Turks.
Yeah, simply because they were near the border. So, you know, go and take Iran.
Just like the case of Magellan. Magellan is not Spanish.
yeah, something like that. And see, these things are only coming out now because somebody, not even us, somebody in the West realized that, okay, the history of Iran, if you want to access the best sources for the 13th and 14th century history of Iran, you won't find anything in Iran or in Iraq. You have to go to the sources in China.
Or
Christian and Jewish sources.
Really?
This is interesting because the court, the Turks were Christians.
Uh-huh.
And so they were aided by the Christians in Armenia.
Uh-huh.
So when they came to power, all their court was comprised of Christians and Jews. So they had this bias. In the beginning, they had a bias against Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
So the court comprised of Christians and Jews. What does that tell you? That means all the literate people employed by the government are Christians and Jews.
Mm-hmm.
That means that obviously these people are going to write documents in their own scripts, which is like Syriac or Aramaic. And that survives. Our history is fully intact only if we are willing to look at alternative sources.
Mm-hmm.
At Syriac and Aramaic sources.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know that. And we have to come to learn that.
Right.
So, yeah.
But the oldest part of the Persian history, they have collections of, you know, documents.
Yeah, you're talking about the beginnings of the Persian
Sort
Empire.
Of like that. They,
yeah, those documents also come from Europe.
Right. Europe?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. you see the oldest evidence that we have are the entablatures and the stone inscriptions that are in cuneiform. We can't read cuneiform. We need somebody to decipher the cuneiform. And who deciphers that? The archaeologist. And when did they do that? 19th century, when archaeology was a science in Europe, not in the Middle East. And so the archaeologists were European. So, yeah, we still had to rely on that.
Okay, that's interesting. So, I think we should move on topics that needs explanation on the philosophy of these letters behind, what's behind these letters that we are writing in Jawian or in Arabic.
Okay, that's a good question. That's a very good question. See, the Arabic... Now, I don't mean to put down the Arabs, but the Arabs of the Bedouin Arabs of Arabia before Islam, well, of course, they were Bedouins.
Mm-hmm.
There was little farming. They were
desert
mostly
nomads.
Yeah, nomads and shepherds.
Yeah.
And migrating tribes. So they had little to rely on in terms of material culture. Therefore, they developed a highly sophisticated intellectual culture.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by highly sophisticated intellectual culture?
Well, the Arabs of Jahiliyyah, or the ignorance phase,
yeah,
or the dark ages,
the pre-Islam,
pre-Islamic age, these were actually sophisticated poets and philosophers.
Poets and philosophers.
Yeah, so they were deeply into poetry and philosophy, literature, which is what makes Arabic one of the most concise languages in the world in terms of grammar. So it's probably Esperanto, Latin, and Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
These three are the most complete. And most of that is owed to the period of Jahiliyyah, which the pre-Islamic period. Yeah, they developed their grammar. Obviously, of course, we also have great improvements in the first few centuries of Islam. So that's Arabic literature. And philosophy was also one of their philosophy, astronomy, actually. Because, I mean, these people dealt with a sky with no clouds, like perfectly clear sky. And they had like the whole night to watch the sky. And of course, in the desert, you need to you really need to rely on the stars, on the stars to find your location and, and your direction. And astronomy was a big thing among the Jahiliyyah Arabs. Philosophy, say, likewise. So these people developed a highly sophisticated oral culture, a highly sophisticated intellectual culture, even before they were literate. And then when they were literated or lettered by the Jews and the Christians, this is like the 200 years, probably 300 years before Islam, they applied that intellectual culture into the literature, and then they developed the Arabic alphabet. The Arabic alphabet, you see, it evolves out of Phoenician. Phoenician leads to Aramaic. Aramaic leads to all different branches of like Hebrew,
including Arabic.
And Arabic. The Aramaic alphabet contains 22 letters. Abjad, Hawaz, Hotti, Kalaman, Safas. I think Safas or Abjad, Hawaz, Hotti, Kalaman, Safas, Qarshat, somewhere there. And then what the Arabs do is they add 22, they add six more to that.
They add then they change the figures of some letters. So.
No, the figures come later.
They come later.
But so the Arabic alphabet becomes more concise, 28 letters. Now this is an interesting question: why 28? Why not 32? Why not 40?
Is there behind that number?
There's a philosophy behind that. 28 letters represent the 28 days of the lunar calendar.
Which one? The lunar calendar, you mean the Hijra calendar?
No, the lunar cycle. The cycle that the moon takes around the earth.
28 days.
28 days to complete the cycle from crescent to crescent. Or from full moon to full moon. That's 28 days. 4 weeks.
See.
Divided into seven, into four, seven days. And then, each letter represents one day. In the lunar calendar. And then each letter has an element. By element, I mean the four traditional elements of
earth, fire, and sun.
So there's an element to the letters.
Just like the Taoism.
Exactly. It's becoming very sophisticated. There's an element to the letters. There's a lunar day to the letters. There's actually a planet to each letter. There, back then, they knew seven planets, but they also considered the sun and the moon as planets.
Okay. So before continuing that topic, that interesting topic, we would like to have some sort of advertisement.
Sure.
Magbalik po tayo para sa ilang patalistas.
Kasali ka!
Oo nga, kasali ka!
Alam mo ba yung issue tungkol
sa pagkakas? Oo, narinig ko na yan.
Kasali ka! I don't believe that.
Kasali ka!
So what?
Pero kung tutusin, mali yung nagsasali.
Kasali ka!
Hindi dapat gano'n ang pagkakas sa kanila.
You gotta be kidding me.
Hindi ah, magaling
ka. I swear to John Mars! Ikaw, kasali ang opinion mo.
Matinong usapan para sa maunlad na bayan. Dito sa DZUP 1602, Kasali ka!
Mga kapunto, dalawang oras na ang ating puntuhan.
Mula Lunes hanggang Biyernes.
Alas 2 hanggang alas 4 ng hapon.
Balitaan.
Balitaktakan.
At puntuhan.
May punto ka dyan.
Punto ka dyan.
lighting homes, lighting hearts this 2013. Join UP JMA at the UP Sunken Garden this March 7, 2013 as they present Project Light, UP Lights the Nation. An exciting all-day fair in collaboration with My Shelter Foundation featuring the worldwide phenomenon A Litter of Light. Be part of a green revolution as we make hundreds of litter of light bottles to light houses all over the Philippines. Join us on March 7, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the UP Sunken Garden as we light the nation. Solar power to the people. For more information, visit us at www.upjma.com and facebook.com/officialupjma.
Handa ka na ba para sa Art Quiz 2013? Sali na sa annual architectural quiz show na handog ng UP Architectural Forum sa kanilang 31st taon. Makipagtagisan ng kaalaman tungkol sa building technologies at construction kasama ang iba't ibang mga paaralan sa loob at labas ng Metro Manila. Ito'y gaganapin ngayong February 28, 2013 sa National Institute for Science and Mathematics Education o NISMED sa UP Diliman. Tara na't sumali sa Art Quiz 2013 Building Technology.
Nag-aral ka na ba? Mamaya kasi, pasasagutin na kita eh. Like!
Hi! Love ko na yata siya. Like!
Bagay silang dalawa kasi pareho silang basura. Super like!
Like!
Like! Like! Like!
Friends, hinay-hinay lang sa pag-expose ng buhay niyo sa internet. Pag-isipang mabuti ang mga post ninyo. Maging mas responsable sa paggamit ng mga social networking sites. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Wow! Si Superman! Idol ko yan eh!
Bakit mo idol si Superman?
Kasi malakas siya!
Oo nga no!
Sana may superpowers ako para makatulong rin ako sa iba!
Hindi kailangan ng pambihirang lakas o kapangyarihan para maging superhero at makatulong sa kapwa. Pwede ka maging super sa pamamagitan ng maliliit ngunit mabubuting gawa.
Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Assalamualaikum. Ito ang Salam Radio, naghahatid sa inyo ng mga balita at talakayan tungkol sa Islam, kulturang Muslim at iba pa.
Assalamualaikum. Tayo po ay nagbabalik sa ating pinag-usapan dito with Father Professor Riza. We were mentioning lately about the significance of these letters, what's behind these letters.
Yeah.
Then you were talking about that sort of number,
the representations,
the cycle of the moon and everything. Just continue. Yeah. Continue. It's interesting.
Sure. So anyway, the 28 letters came to represent the lunar cycle. They came to represent the elements, the planets,
mm-hmm.
And then there's also numerical representation of
numerology
the
letters. Numerology is a sort of...
Yeah, that's how it relates to numerology. But in the old times, you see, that's why what you call in English as the Arabic numbers.
Arabic numbers.
You know, in the Middle East, we don't call them Arabic numbers. We call them Hindi.
Hindi.
They're Indian numbers.
Arabic numericals is sort of...
Yeah, it. Arabic numericals are not Arabic numericals. They're Indian numericals.
They're Indian, yeah.
Yeah, just like the just like the Romans, the Arabs represented their numbers with alphabet,
mm-hmm.
but unlike the Romans, their numerical system was such that the 28 letters,
mm-hmm.
would represent numbers on a decimal division,
mm-hmm.
from 1 to 1,000. So the 22 letters of the Aramaic would end at 400.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you? It's like this: Abjad, Hawaz, Hoti. They go from 1 to 10. Aleph is 1. B, mm-hmm. is a... Ba is a 2. Jim is 3. Dal is 4. 1 to 10. Abjad, Hawaz, Hoti.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kalaman, Safas, they go from 10 to 100.
Mm-hmm.
And then from 100 to 1,000. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, mm-hmm. 70, 80, 90. 100 and then 200. So that represents a complete set. So, mm-hmm. when you want to say, for example, 1,264,
you just combine it.
You just write each letter that represents, mm-hmm. one of those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it's like that. So the Indian numericals, or what you call as Arabic numerals, they came later.
Mm-hmm.
They came later. So these letters, they have, each of them have a number that represents them, and then comes in numerology.
Mm-hmm.
You get, it's said that in some part of Quran it says And upon it we set the number 19,
mm-hmm.
right? And then if you add up the letters and if you add up the ayah and everything is divisible to 19. Mm-hmm. And they consider that as a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it's deeper than that. Mm-hmm. It's deeper than that because each letter represents a number, and God knows what will happen if you play with those letters and those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Actually, that's not only limited to Quran. That could be any text. You play with the letters and numerical representations. You're going to be amazed with the outcomes. Which is why there is such a thing as, I don't know if you've heard of the Bible code.
The Vinci code, sort of
like that. Yeah, the Bible code is something that it's not the Christian Bible, but the Old Testament.
The Old Testament.
The Hebrew Bible.
Mm-hmm.
The Old Testament. There are scholars. In fact, there are rabbis. That's a whole science or pseudoscience, so to say. That focuses on that, on the numerical representations of the alphabet in the Old Testament, and they play with that, and they believe that whatever question you put there, the answer will be extracted. In Islam, we have an equivalent called Jafra, Ilm al-Jafra, which is whatever it's they use Quranic ayat for that. So whatever question you put. I don't want to comment on the veracity of that. Maybe it's a pseudoscience. I don't know. Well, I don't know. I have no knowledge of that. But there is such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you see, unfortunately, in the modern age, we have, with the advent of modernism, with the introduction of modern education into the Middle East and into the Orient, we were forced to abandon, discriminate, feel inferior, and humiliate our own heritage. So like today you talk about numerology, you talk about astrology. They are pseudoscience, okay? They are I'm not denying the fact that the claims they make are not provable by science.
Mm-hmm.
But these were traditions. These were traditions that were abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have abandoned this portion of our classical beliefs, today we have a difficult time understanding our classical texts. Because there are a lot of things in our literature, in our theology, a lot of things that one way or another go to either astronomy, astrology, numerology, alchemy, you know. And we have abandoned, we have mocked and abandoned this heritage. And today we are like, you know, we read these texts and they make no sense to us. Well, if only for literature's sake, for literature's sake, we knew that much about these traditions like numerology and astrology and stuff, oh my God, so much more could we understand our own literature.
Our own heritage.
Our own heritage, yeah. So that at least that far, because I'm not gonna because you wanna examine the veracity of the claims in these pseudosciences. That's a whole different course.
Yeah.
You could do thesis on that. You could do extended research on that. So I'm not gonna comment on that because that's not my line.
Mm-hmm.
But there is such a heritage that we have denied, and we feel alien with our ancestral backgrounds. At least so much I can say, you know. And that exists in the Arabic letters, in the Arabic literature, even in the artistic aspects, the calligraphy. Like last time I mentioned that the yin yang philosophy,
the Taoist
philosophy, has great influence on Arabic calligraphy, not just calligraphy, but Middle Eastern arts.
Mm-hmm.
Feng shui. You will see feng shui in the ancient buildings of the Middle East if you understand feng shui. If you don't understand, it's just, you will never know. But if you understand feng shui, why is this water fountain located here? Why is that door located there? And, you know, and you will see it.
The Arab world is also traditionally aware of this feng shui sort of thing.
I'm saying that definitely the people who built those buildings knew something. Definitely. Otherwise, there would be no justification for certain things, elements, architectural elements that you see in the buildings.
Incidentally, I also heard may uncles in the province na wag gumagawa sila ng yung pintuan na door, when they construct a door, they sort of measure it by their feet.
Yeah.
And they count.
Yeah.
And then, hanggang dito, pag ganito, malas. Pag ganito, ay may swerte. Something.
Oh.
They use that kind of, you know, belief. They engage some sort of, you know, tradition, sort of traditions.
Yeah. There are, yeah. We also have that in Malaysia. Using the body measurements for architectural purposes. Mm-hmm. Yes. In fact, my supervisor had focused on that for his own thesis.
Really?
Yeah, in the Malay architecture. If you go to Professor Abraham Sakili of
professor,
UP.
Of the Arts and Letters professor. Yeah,
or architect Norma Alarcon from UST. And these are the experts on those topics. Yeah.
It's interesting because we see here a connection between the, you know, the locals and the Arab world and the others in this particular new field.
Yeah, so there's so much to read, so much to research.
So it reminds me of the Prophet's saying, yung hadith ng Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Sabi niya, you seek knowledge even if you reach China.
Yeah.
So sort of parang sabi may connection to sa ibang mga ano, ibang elements of learning.
Yeah.
In other areas.
Yeah.
Of the world. So that's very interesting. So maraming salamat po sa ating guest, si Professor Riza.
Thank you very much.
Sa kanyang oras, sa pag-share niya ng kanyang expertise dito sa Islamic calligraphy at sa Jawi, na sa tingin ko ay napakahalaga po para sa, hindi lamang po para sa mga Muslim, kahit yung mga hindi Muslim, lalo na dito sa ating academe, na kailangan din natin, you know, kailangan natin maintindihan yung the others, yung mga belief ng ibang tao, para lalo nating ma-appreciate yung kanilang kultura. At ganun din, pero meron tayong sharing of, information na along the way, magkakaintindihan tayo at, you know, maiwasan yung mga conflict na minsan ay nagiging resulta nga ng mas malawakang problema sa ating lugar. So, isa po yung sa mga significance ng pag-unawa natin ng calligraphy. At saka, including din po sa arkitektura, it's an art actually. Calligraphy is an art, and napakagandang hobby po itong maging calligrapher. Actually, na-experience po namin ito ng nakaraang mga araw. At last na po itong namin sa workshop namin sa Islamic Studies actually this week, Thursday, whole day na po kami. So, sana po magkaroon po ng ibang session pa, inshallah, kung papayagan ni Professor Riza na pag may panahon siya. Kasi malay natin, the next workshop, baka dadami na yung mga atin. Sige, kasi biglaan po kasi ito eh. May mga estudyante po, may mga sumama po sa amin na galing sa mga iba't ibang colleges. Actually, may architecture, meron din sa Asian, sa Islamic. So, iba-iba po estudyante doon. Nagsasama-sama lahat kami para lalo naming ma-appreciate yung Arabic letters. So, maraming salamat po. Hanggang dito na lang po kami. Sure. Ito po ang Salam Radio, DZUP 1602. Kasali ka.
Ito ang Salam Radio, ang nag-iisang programang tungkol sa Islam, kulturang Muslim at iba pa. Hanggang sa susunod na Martes, ika-isa ng hapon. Ito ang DZUP, Kasali ka.